We are beginning. Let me just start this up. Yeah, so there we go. We are beginning this news, this session, which is Rule 2. So just let's appreciate what we're doing. We're in a series called Getting to 613. We're trying to understand how it is that we get to 613 mitzvahs. And in order to understand that, we need to understand the parameters, the rules of how mitzvahs work. So here's how it works. What is interesting is that the Rambam sets out for us 14 different rules which we can use in order to be able to understand what's included in the 613 mitzvahs and what is excluded. While we go through those rules, it actually helps us understand a lot more about the mitzvahs and gives us a little bit more of a perspective of how the mitzvah system works as a whole. So last week we focused on the difference between a derabbanan and daraisa, a biblical and a rabbinic commandment. And there's a whole fascinating debate and discussion about that, as we saw in the Rambam and the Ramban. What we're going to be focusing on today is a different element. This is the second rule of the Rambam, Shoresh Sheini, the second rule. And it really deals with tradition, expansion, or regulation. So what were the rabbis trying to do? And the first time I came across this idea really shaped and changed the way I look at anything else to do with the way we read Gemara, the way we read Mishnah, the way we appreciate Torah. So I'd like to spend a little bit of time unpacking this and seeing what the Rambam says about this. It really gives us a much more sophisticated perspective on how Torah works, how Torah Shebaal Peh works specifically. So let's jump straight in. And I want to just commend everybody for taking the time to be here, because I know that it's not this is not a beginner's shiur. This is a very serious shiur that we're working on together, and I appreciate everybody taking the moment to be here to learn together. Let's dive straight in. This is a really remarkable topic, and I ask everybody to bear with me as we try to unpack this in a way that is meaningful. Here we go. So let's take a look at Rule 2 for a second. Here we go. Here is a screen share of it, but as well, I sent out the notes a little earlier to the folks as well. So here we go. The second rule over here, tradition, expansion, or regulation. What were the rabbis doing? So the Rambam says the beginning of Shoresh Sheini, the second route to the mitzvah. So here's the comment he makes. She'ein ro'oi limanois, kol ma shemelamdim ba'achas mishloish esrei midois, we're not going to include in the count of 613 mitzvahs any commandment which is derived out of one of the 13 midos, one of the 13 principles of derivation, or from an inclusion, says the Rambam. Okay, so what is the Rambam referring to? What the Rambam seems to be referring to is that if you open any siddur before Psukei Dezimra begins, there's a paragraph which reads as follows. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Rabbi Shmuel would say, "Bishloish Esrei Midos HaTorah Nidresh Espohem." This is the price of Rabbi Shmuel. There are 13, we'll call it, derivational tools that are given in expanding the Torah. And there's a description of what they are. The 13 are Kal V'Chomer, that's a logical buildup. Gezerah Shavah, when you have a matched word in two different parashios, which creates a logic bridge. When you create a rule out of one example, miklal ufrat, when you have a rule and then a example, or mifrat uklal, or when you have an example and then a rule, and it goes on. There's 13 of these principles which are logical derivations used to expand the Torah. So the Rambam says anything which uses one of those rules to expand a mitzvah is not going to be included in the count of 613. Now, just to sufficiently confuse ourselves first, I'd like to go to actually the beginning of the Rambam's work on this, where he actually, the words he says, and then come back and understand what he's trying to get at. Because I want to show you, I'd like to just spend a little time appreciating the complexity of what this means. Here is the continuation on page 5 of what the Rambam actually says about this. Hine, and I'd like to just embrace the difficulty, embrace the complexity of understanding what he's trying to tell us. Hine, parmim tipol boi machloikes. There's sometimes that there is going to be the first line. Kvar bi'arnu, I've already explained, v'psichas chibureinu b'pirosh ha-mishnah, in my commentary to the Mishnah, she'roiv dinei Torah, that most of the commentaries on the explanations of the Torah, yotzu b'shloish esrei midos, she'atorah nidreshes bohem, v'she'adin ha'yotzei b'midos, b'midos, b'midos. And most of the laws we learn are, in fact, derived out of the 13 principles that Rabbi Shmuel has laid out for us. Hinei, he explains, Palmim tipol b'machloikas. Sometimes you'll see there's a dispute as to what or how we apply this rule. V'shiyesham dinim oy pirushim mekubalim imoshe ein machloikas bohem. There are other laws which are received from Moshe, and there's no dispute about them. But we bring a proof from them using one of the 13 rules of derivation. So the Rama says, but not everything is derived from the Torah. Some things actually are received ahead of time, and we simply append them to a idea which is found in the Pasuk. And the Rambam in the next few lines says, the ones which are derived, so we come to a Pasuk and we say, logically it seems that we should come to X, Y, Z conclusion, that conclusion is not included in the mitzvahs. But if we already have the conclusion, and now we're simply appending it to a Pasuk, and the Pasuk is a proof, a support for this notion which we already had beforehand, that would be included in the 613 mitzvahs. Okay, so that sounds a little confusing. How exactly does that work? What is the Rambam referring to? So generally speaking, a very good rule when it comes to researching things is that when the author tells you to look somewhere, you should look somewhere. So what does the Rambam say? He says, I explained this already in the introduction to the Pirush HaMishnah. I explained this in the introduction to the Pirush HaMishnah. What does that mean? The Rambam wrote a number of very, very important works. The first work that he wrote was when he was very young, and that was the Pirush HaMishnayos, the explanation of the Mishnayos, which is fascinating. He wrote a good amount of it on the run when they were escaping from Spain in his travels, and it's something which is printed in almost every regular sets of Mishnayos today. So that's the Rambam's first work, and later on he wrote the Yad, which is the halachas, the 14 volumes of halacha with the introduction of the Sefer HaMitzvos, which is what we're learning right now, and then and Moreh Nevuchim as well. So you're saying, refer back to my introduction to the explanation of the Mishnah in order to understand what I'm talking about. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to do that, because you see, the Rambam is pretty vague over here. He expects us to know what he's talking about, and he's not giving us examples at this point in time. He does give a few examples later on, but it's not so helpful to understand this general rule. So what I did was I put in a few paragraphs. We're not going to do all of them at all, so do not get worried. I would like to address some of the explanations the Rambam is talking about over here. And here is what he says in the Pirush HaMishnayos, to his introduction to Pirush HaMishnayos, which is what he's referring to right over here. And I think it's so eye-opening. Here's what he says. Hinei, lecha mashal. I'm going to tell you what actually happened at Sinai. What was that was going on at Sinai? What was Moshe Rabbeinu receiving from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Let's get down to it. Nuts and bolts. He says, mashal shaKadosh Baruch Hu, Omar leMoshe besukos teshu shivas yamim. Hashem told Moses at Sinai, in Sukkos, in his huts, you will dwell for 7 days. That's a pasuk in Parshas Emor, Vayikra Perek Chav Gimel. Okay? That's explicit in the Torah. No questions about that. That's definitely one of the 613 commandments, right? Now, Achar Koch, but afterwards, Hoidia Sheasukah Hazois, Choy Va'ala Zakar Charim, V'loy Ala Nekevois. Hashem then told Moshe Rabbeinu that it was only incumbent upon males and not females, and that those who are sick do not need to sit in a sukkah, and neither do travelers need to sit in a sukkah. They just have to, see what the hell that applies. That the covering needs to be grown from the ground, and it could not be used. You cannot use something which is animal grown or is a kli which has a functional purpose, which is mekabel tuma. Avino ma'asher titzmacha oretz. Even if it does grow from the ground, kagoyin hakasosos akroim abgadim. Let's say clothes or pillowcases. Voidia she ha'achila v'ashtia v'ashena ba kol shiva chayva. And we learn, and Moshe was also taught that eating in the sukkah for all 7 days is a chayva, is a rule, a responsibility. The minimum dimensions in terms of the footprint is 7 by 7 hand breadths. That its height should be no less than 10 tvachim. So all these are told to Moshe Rabbeinu. Do you see these written in the Torah? All these ideas. Do you see these written in the Torah? And the answer is absolutely not. These were given to Moshe Rabbeinu, not written, but orally. That's what is happening over here. We see the Torah Shebichsav, the written Torah, and the Torah Sheba'al Peh. Where did they happen? At the same location. HaKadosh Baruch Hu at Sinai is telling Moshe Rabbeinu, but there are two mediums through which he conveys this information. One, written, and two, orally. Which is the bigger of the two? Clearly, the oral. The oral is all the details which explain the written, right? So the written is very vague. Basukos Teshu Shivas Yomim. When, who, what, how big, how tall, all those details were given orally. And therefore it says, V'kasher boha Novi olav ha-shalom nitna loy ha-mitzvah azayis u'pirusha. When the Navi, that's Moshe Rabbeinu, received all of this explanation, V'chein ha-shesh mi'ois v'shloish yisrei mitzvois, heim u'pirusham ha-mitzvois b'ksav v'apirush al-peh. Similarly, Moshe Rabbeinu received all the commandments. This is one example the Rambam is giving of sukkahs, of what the sukkah looks like. Every mitzvah had its explanations which were given to Moshe Rabbeinu. At the very end of his life, in the end of the 40th year, Moshe Rabbeinu brought the community together. I know that my death is imminent. So he says, if anybody heard a halacha and forgot what exactly it was referring to, inshallah, and Moshe Rabbeinu says, anybody who has any doubt should come now. Now, what doubt could they have? Which of the two sections is there more likely to be doubt? Well, if it's written down, there's little doubt surrounding it because it's written down. Clearly, Moshe Rabbeinu was offering to be a resource for the not written part, which we call the Torah Sheba'al Peh, the explanation of that. And therefore, that's what exactly occurred. Everybody came and asked Moshe Rabbeinu. Nonetheless, as we'll see later on, there were a number of halachas which were forgotten. So it seems, just to start off over here, that when we talk about the Torah Shebichsav and the Torah Sheba'al Peh, the Torah Sheba'al Peh was also given at Sinai, right? It was simply an explanation of what was actually written at Sinai. Okay, so that's the first step we have here. This is what's called Mekubal Mipul Moshe. It was received by Moses. Now, Rambam goes on, and this is actually a few pages later in the introduction, to go on to explain this and divide up all of Torah Sheba'al Peh, all of the oral Torah, into five dimensions. And here's how he explains it. He says, "V'hu shi'achol adam lamar." A person maybe have the conjecture to say, the whole Torah, all of the oral law was given at Sinai, a person might come to say, "In Cain, ma elu ha'alachos hayichidos shenoymar bohem halacha l'moshe misina." So the Rambam says, so what does it mean when you say something is a halacha l'moshe misina? What category is that when you say something is a halacha l'moshe misina, which appears numerous times in the Mishnah and the Gemara? I'd like to add a question here before going further, and that is that where does machlokes come from in this case? If it's true that Moshe Rabbeinu was given all the explanations of the mitzvahs as to what they are, how they operate, what they look like, then pray tell, where does machlokes arrive? Why is it that you open up the Mishnayos, you open up the Gemara, and almost every daf has a machlokes on it? Surely if Moshe Rabbeinu had got this all from Sinai, then why would there be any dispute on the matter? That's one of the questions I'd like to address, and the Rambam is going to address in just a moment. He says, "V'zeh ikar yesh l'chol amod al sodai." The Rambam says, this is a very important foundation. You really ought to get a sense of what's going on here. "V'hu sha'pirushim ha'mekubalim b'pi Moshe, k'mo she'amarnu, midivreihem ein machlokes bohem b'shum ponim." The Rambam says, I explained to you that when Moshe Rabbeinu received things, there was no machlokes. Meaning, how high is a sukkah? No one disagrees that the minimum height is 10 tvachim. Sharei me'az vad ata. From that time, from Sinai until now, lo matzonu machlokes shenafla bizman min hazmanim mimos Moshe v'ad Rav Ashi. Bein hachachomim kedei shiyoymar echad amoytzi ayin chavero yotzienos enoi. Shenemar ayin ba'ayin. So the Rambam says, there is no one, when it comes to this area of Torah Shebaal Peh, the one that was received at Sinai by Moshe Rabbeinu from Hashem, no one ever disputed it. As an example, the Rambam says, when the Torah says ayin ba'ayin, if a person knocks out another person's eye, God forbid, and the Torah says ayin ba'ayin or ayin tachas ayin, no one, there is not a single opinion in all of rabbinic literature who would say that it means to say mamash. No one ever agrees and says, oh no, really, it used to mean that, you know, based on would extract their eye. No. Everyone knows that it is only monetary. It is being extracted, which means by the fact that there's no machlokes, it clearly was one of the things that Hashem explained to Moshe when trying to verify what's going on. Similarly, when the Torah says, you'll take on the first day of Sukkos, this pre-Eitz Adar, this beautiful fruit or this returning fruit, no one ever suggests, there's not like one dissident opinion in the Gemara which says it's a pomegranate. Just isn't. You can look from the top to the bottom of the Talmud, you'll never find a dispute about this. When it refers to the Shuhadas, when it comes to the Eitz Avos, which refers to the myrtle, no one disagrees. When there's a case of a woman who gets involved in a particular argument with her husband and the man, and she reaches for the private parts of the person, and it says her hand will be cut off. It doesn't never means she'll go for. No one ever disagrees and says it refers to being cutting off her hand. So the Rambam goes on to give numerous examples where you'll see that the tradition has it that no one disagrees from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu till now. This is an indication that these particular halachos are in fact things which were given as the Torah Shebaal Peh, as the oral Torah, as an explanation of the written Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu received, says the Rambam. Very clear. Very, very absolutely incandescently clear. This now lays the groundwork and he gives other examples, that is the way that a Sefer Torah is written, the way that Tefillin, the shape of Tefillin, all these kind of things which no one disagrees with. So the Rambam says, I'm going to now give you five different dimensions of how the oral Torah is divided. Here's what he says at the bottom of this paragraph here, on the bottom of page 2. He says, Lefichach, hayuchilka hadinim amyusadim b'Torah ala yikarim o'ele sheikdamnu nechlokim lechamishala kolchalakim. There's five dimensions. Hachelik arishon pirushim mekubalim mipim Moshe. The first section are those which are received directly from Moses. V'yesh lahim remez b'kosov. And there is a hint to them in the pasuk. V'evshal ha'itzion b'derech svara. And you might even logically arrive at it through logic. When somebody says, I have a tradition, this is what it is, and no one disagrees with him, that is ultimately one of these sections that Moshe Rabbeinu received from Sinai. But he does add over here in this that you could, when, let's say, for an example, by the Esrog. The Esrog says, is a pre-Eitz Hadar. The Gemara says, what does Eitz Hadar mean? So one of the explanations is that it returns to the tree in the same place from year to year. Now the explanation is that Hadar comes from the notion of beauty. There's a number of explanations that the Gemara in Shabbos in the third perek, in Sukkah in the third perek, explains. So the Rambam says, it is without dispute, so clearly it comes from Moshe Mi-Sinai, but not only does it come without a dispute, you could also somehow see it in the Pasuk. Not that the rabbi sat there and said, oh, this must be what the Pasuk's talking about. No, we know what the Pasuk's talking about. We have the foregone conclusion already because we know Moshe Rabbeinu told us what he heard from Hashem. But we could also see that it comes out of the Pasuk. That's the first category of Torah Shebaal Peh. The second one is very, very similar, but with subtle differences. The second category is almost identical, and that is any category you'll see in the Gemara which is called a halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, a law which came from Moses at Sinai. And in fact, again, this is another example of something where the Rambam says there is no dispute about. The only difference between this and the first category is that there's no way that the pasuk could ever be used to deduce it. There's no logical flow from the pasuk to this outcome, according to the Rambam. But it's essentially the same idea because there's no dispute. He gives numerous examples of this, and anytime you see the Gemara says this, halacha l'moshe v'sinah, it falls into the second category. He gives an example, shiurim. Shiurim means to say the fact that the regular eating is a kazayas. The amount that a person needs to carry on Shabbos, ksoves agasa. The amount that a person needs to The person needs to eat on Yom Kippur. All the shiurim that are implicit in the Torah are called halacha l'moshe v'sinah. It's a Gemara in Sukkah on Daf Dalet. And in fact, all of these, says the Rambam, are things which are beyond dispute. No one ever argues on what these shiurim, these measures are, because these were given by Hashem to Moses at Sinai as Torah Shebaal Peh. I personally would like to collapse these two categories. And by the way, the Rambam does collapse these two categories later on in his life, in his halacha, in Hilchos Mamrim, where he basically puts these in the same category. Because the only real difference is whether the pasuk could show us to these logically or not. Okay. Now, the third category is where it gets interesting. The third category is relevant to us right now. Hachelek hashlishi. What's the third category of, we'll call it, oral law? Hadinim shoytziu al darkei hasvara v'nafal bo machlokes. These are laws which are extracted through human logic, and therefore there is dispute about among them. Kama shezacharnu, as I have explained, v'nifsak hadin bohem al pi ha'rov. And let's say you have a number of sages who say we derive it one way, and a few sages who say we derive it another way. There's a vote, and we follow the majority. And this will happen when there's perhaps different ways of looking at things. That's why the Gemara says in Yevamos, "Im halacha nakabel, v'im ladin yesh tshuva." The Gemara says, if it's a halacha, we'll accept it. We'll put down our arms. We won't argue. But if it is a din, if it's logic, then I perhaps will suggest the following, which means the Gemara is showing us that there's different categories of Torah Shebaal Peh. If it's a tradition from Moshe Mi-Sinai, I have nothing to say. It's an esrog. There's nothing I can argue. But if it's din, if it's logic, then I can apply my logic with greatest of respect to you. Perhaps one of the sages says, I can now derive it differently. Aval nafla machlok esayon bedavar shle nishmak boy halacha. Machlokes applies where there was no tradition. And therefore, when people are using the logic, Chazal using those tools of Rabbi Yishmael as an example to extract a law, they will come to different conclusions sometimes. The Gemara will say, what are they arguing about? Or my timer to Rabbi Ploini. The Gemara will say, what's the reason or the logic of one Rabbi? Or or what's the difference between the two of them? The Gemara presents sides. Rabbi X believes this, Rabbi Y believes that, and they go backwards, ping pong. What does this one say? What about this pasuk? What about this proof? What about that proof? Backwards, forwards, and this can even take over a amud or daf in the Gemara. And then this is what the Rambam says. So now let's appreciate this. Where do the 13 principles of Rabbi Shmuel come from? Apparently, they themselves, these 13 principles which you find in any siddur, is in fact also a halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai. Meaning, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu, you have the capacity as a human being to look into the Torah, and with a sufficiently encultured baggage, if you have sufficient history and respect, and you spent your entire life as being one of the leaders of Klal Yisrael, you have the right to be able to expand the scope of the Torah using these rules. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe Rabbeinu the toolbox of expansion. Those are the Yud Gimel Midos. However, applying them was sometimes a matter of contention. Usually, that Some people would apply them in one way, some people would apply them in another. This one would apply the Gzera Shavahiyah, this one would not apply the Gzera Shavahiyah. This one would say there is a Kavul Chomer, this one would say there's not a Kavul Chomer, and that's where Machloikas is. And as the Rambam pointed out, until really the times of Hillel and Shammai, most Machloikasim were voted on. So even if there may have been a dispute in this category of Torah Shabbal Peh, it was a vote, and unilaterally we went one way because we go after the Rav, we go after the majority, which is one of the rules the Torah tells us. Okay? So this is different. This is not Moshe Rabbeinu being told that the word it says pre-Eitz Adar. In fact, it refers to the Esrog. This is now when it says Es Hashem Elokicha Tira, you shall fear Hashem. The word Es is L'Rabbos Tamidei Chachamim. Es, the word Es is darshans to expand, to include Tamidei Chachamim. Something which I think perhaps this week is required a little bit of affirmation in our community. So that is not what Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what Rabbi Akiva, in his greatness of understanding, with his enculturation and saturation in Torah, was able to say, I apply this understanding. Who is someone who can be in the same category as HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak? Who is the lawgiver to the microcosmic level of a human being? Who could be in the same category is Talmidei Chachamim. That's what the Rambam says. And there's numerous examples across the Gemara where there's a derivation, and then because there's a derivation, there is a machlekes. This is a different category. It's also Torah Shebaal Peh, but it's not Mikubal Misinai. It's using the tools which were accepted Misinai, but applying them to extract a din. And finally, we're just going to go to the last two categories. The Rambam says they're very similar to each other. Again, the Rambam later on will collapse category 4 and 5 into one. And the number 4 is Va'achelek Haravi'i Heim Gezeiros Shetiknu Anavim Vachachomim B'chol Dor V'Dor Kedesh Shalasos Siagla Torah V'Aleim Tziva HaKadosh Baruch Hu La'asosam. So the fourth category of Torah Shebaal Peh is when the Chachomim of the generation would make Gezeiros decrees, right? So, you know, a mundane example is, you know, it is illegal to travel at night without your car lights on. That is what the government has said is important. That's a decree. Similarly, in Torah, they made certain fences to protect ourselves from ourselves, to protect ourselves from halacha. And the Torah says, "Ushmartem is mishmarti, uvaba akabola asu mishmeres mishmarti." The Torah encourages the chachamim to make guardrails around it. Example being many examples, but one example is muktzah on Shabbos. Muktzah was not said min haTorah explicitly. But muktzah is that I'm not allowed to move items which have no purpose on Shabbos. There's various different categories of muktzah. There's numerous different categories which have different halachas. But where does that come from? That came from the sages who are putting a guardrail around the biblical law of Shabbos. That's also Torah Shebaal Peh. It's also Oral Torah. But it did not stem from Sinai. It stemmed from the mandate at Sinai, which says, Asu mishmeres le'mishmarti. Hashem says, I want you to make these guardrails. But ultimately, it was not explicitly explicated then. It was now up to the minds of the sages, which is why, says the Rambam, this also has matters of debate. He gives an example. Let's say, eating milk and meat. The Torah says that Loisav Hashel Gadiba Chalev Imoy 3 times, and one of them is to include not eating meat and milk together. But the Chachamim is saying, you know what is included in this as well, as a guardrail, as a decree, is Basar Oif, when it comes to fowl, chicken. Chicken and milk are, in fact, a Gezerah Midrabbanan. It's one of this category of a Sayag, of offense. But because it is a matter of a decree, which is from the sages, not everybody was on the same page. As an example, Rabbi Yosef Aglili, Hayam Matir, says the Rambam. Rabbi Yosef Aglili disagreed with the Chachamim. Why is it that we don't pass him like Rabbi Yosef Aglili? Because he was outvoted, as the Rambam explained. Meaning to say, it was a dispute between the majority of the sages and Rabbi Yosef Aglili, whether to impose a decree in this particular case or not. This is not deriving anything from the Torah. This is simply guarding the Torah. In this case, Rabbi Yosef Aglili was outvoted. He doesn't even stand as a snif lahakel. He's not even a element which remains in halacha. He was outvoted. But this is an example of why there can be a machloikas in this. And finally, the fifth category, which is very similar. Hachelik hachamishi emdinim ha'asuyim al derech hakira v'haskomav. There are takonos, which are called enactments and minhagim, which No, which were enacted by the Chachamim as well. So, as an example, he goes on to talk about the Takonos of Ezra, Moshe Rabbeinu. The Gemara in Baba Kama talks about the Takonos of Ezra. So, just to use one or two examples, Takonos of Ezra is that we have Torah reading, three times a week, right? We have it on Mondays, Thursdays, and Shabbos, so we should not have 3 days without Torah. There are numerous takonos of Ezra. Other takonos. Hillel was metaken prusbul. Hiskin prusbul. Prusbul is this document which shifts a person's loans to Beis Din. There's numerous takonos of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. As an example, another takon of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is to shake the lulav or to hold the lulav all 7 days after the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. That was a takona. He wasn't deriving them from the pasuk. That wasn't a category 3. This wasn't that he received this from Moshe Rabbeinu Sinai. He believed and he understood that the community needed to have this takona, that we should remember Zeich El HaMikdash, that that's what it used to be like in the Beis HaMikdash, and now there's no Beis HaMikdash, so we should be shaking lulav like they did in the Beis HaMikdash, which is why we do that today. So Rambam essentially has given us 5 categories, which later on he collapses into 3. So that he collapses number 1 and 2 and number 4 and 5 into the same category, which therefore, for argument's sake, I want to just divide it to summarize as 3 basic categories, because this is what the Rambam himself does in the beginning of Hilchos Mamrim, and that is the following. All of the Oral Torah is divided essentially into 3 place spaces. Space number 1, anything which was said at Sinai, when Moshe Rabbeinu was given the Torah, and Hashem says, "Basukos teshu shivas yamim," Hashem explains what is a sukkah, how big is a sukkah, what does it look like, who's responsible for it, when is it responsible. All those halachas came as a verbal and oral explanation of the written Torah. There's no machlokes in that. There's no dispute. That was a tradition, always was, and that is immutable. By the way, so much of our Judaism is such. You know, some people like to sarcastically think that all the Gemara is an argument. Everybody's arguing. The arguments are on the fringes. The arguments are about specific cases in the fringes. And yes, they do take up a lot of time. But the vast majority of Judaism is agreed upon by all, just to put things in perspective. Okay? Right, nobody's putting on purple tefillin. Right? There never was. Nobody's putting on oval-shaped tefillin. These were halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim. These were things which were given to Moses, and we knew this all throughout of history. Now, the second category is where Moshe Rabbeinu was given the tools of expansion, the tools that Rabbi Shmuel enumerates. Why is it Rabbi Shmuel, by the way? Because there's other sages who have an expanded set of these tools, 52 as an example, 26. So the 13 midos of Rabbi Shmuel were given the license for the Chachamim, the sages, to expand the Torah, to derive from it more halachos. And the third category is not a derivation, but rather actually fences, guardrails, takonos, gezeros, for the community. Mikra Megillah, right? Mikson Shabbos, takonos of Ezra, takonos of Yochanan ben Zakkai, all these things which appear in the Gemara. And these are also subject to dispute because these are the sages who are applying them. Okay? So if you think about the sum total of all Torah Sheval Peh in these 3 categories, it is a very, very helpful way of looking at this and appreciating the bigger perspective. Anytime you think about something which is, we'll call the Oral Torah, say, wait a second, what part of Oral Torah are you talking about? What exactly are you referring to when you talk about the Oral Torah? Is it a tradition? Is it a derivation? Or is it a mandate and a gezeira? It's worthwhile asking that question. That's why these subdivisions are very important. The Rambam, by the way, if anybody would like to, the Rambam does summarize these again later on in his life in his introduction to the Pirush HaMishnah, in Hilchos Mamrim. So I'm not going to read it right now, but here it is in Source 3. The Rambam summarizes what he said in the Hakdamah LePirush HaMishnah, and he gives us the 3 categories as I described them beforehand, right? Those which are learned from the oral tradition, derived from the basis of one's own knowledge through one of the attributes of the biblical exegesis, and appeared to them that is the correct interpretation of the matter. And 3, instituted the matter as a safeguard for the Torah as was necessary for a specific time. These are decrees, edicts, and customs instituted by the sages. Okay? So the Rambam summarizes all of those. He's collapsed the 5 categories into 3, and that's what we have. Now, that being the case, and I think it was very helpful to actually see some examples as the Rambam enumerated in the Hakdamah LePirush HaMishnah, which is why we went back there, which was the most, we'll call it meaty version, the most expanded version the Rambam deals with this. Now that we go have that, now we can come back to what the Rambam was saying here. The Rambam is essentially saying, okay, so let's come back to this. The Rambam is essentially saying that when counting the 613 mitzvahs, I will only count those traditions which came from Moshe Mi Sinai explanations that came from Moshe Mitzrayim, but I will not include anything which was derived or was enacted later on. Okay, so essentially, the category 2 is being excluded from the count of the mitzvos, which makes a whole lot of sense, right? Because why would I exclude it? Is because they weren't derived, they weren't given at Sinai. When it talks about the 613 mitzvos, this was not one of the 613 mitzvos. This was an expansion which happened later on based on the sages. And that does not denigrate it or lower it anyway, but it isn't one of those 613 that Rabbi Simlai was talking about in the Gemara in Makos, as we saw a few weeks ago. That's what the Rambam seems to be talking about over here. He does make mention, as we saw when he first looked at this, that in fact you can have a derivation, something which is Mekubal Misinai, which is used, which a pasuk is quoted for. What's an example? Let's go back to the example of esrog. So the esrog is something which is unequivocal. Nobody says it's a mango. Nobody says it's a banana. Nobody argues on that. We all know that that was a halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim. But the Gemara gives a pasuk, a priyat sadar, and gives numerous explanations as how to attach that to the pasuk. The Rambam says, well, that is not a derivation. That's an attribution, meaning, I'm not trying to say, the sages weren't sitting around the table saying, you know, well, it says, pre-Eitz Adar, what could that mean? Let's put all our ideas on the table, let's see what conclusion we can come to, and maybe we will arrive at the conclusion, ah, esrog, no. We all knew that it was an esrog. But the question is, wait a second, let's look at the pasuk. How could the pasuk be expressing the outcome we already knew? We all know it's an esrog, so how could the pasuk be expressing this? And the Gemara gives various suggestions as to how Priyat Sadar can reflect that conclusion we already know. That would be included in the 613 mitzvahs, right? The Priyat Sadar. But the fact that it quoted the pasuk wasn't a derivation. When you go to other places, Es Hashem Lakecha Tira, Es the Rabbis, Ish Aviv, when it talks about Kavedes Avicha Vesimecha, Es, the word Es that comes to include as an example, one's Achicha Gadol, one's older brother. When it talks about the notion of the fact that we eat in the Sukkah a Kezias, or Kebetz actually on the first out of Sukkot, which is learned from Egzer Shova of Chamisha Asar, that is compared to the first out of Pesach. That's a derivation, right? When it comes to all of those categories, those are things which are expanded from the Yud Gimel Midos Shatarani Dreshes Bohem. Those are subject to dispute. Those are not included in the 613 mitzvahs. Okay, this is the Rambam says, very important rule. The Rambam also gives us an important addition to this. I'd like to read these lines because it's very important to appreciate this. At the end of the Rambam's introduction here to Shoresh Sheni, he says, "V'ulai tachshov, you may think mistakenly, shani boreach milamanoison, I'm not including this category. We'll call it category 2 of the Betorah Sheval Peh, liyoson bilti amitiyos, because they're not really true." Right? Sometimes you hear this. People say, "It's only rabbinic," right? No, it's only irat. The Rambam says, "You may think that's what I'm saying." He says, that's not what why I'm excluding from the 613. God forbid. Anytime a person is expanding what was said in the Torah, Vaim Tariag Mitzvahs, even if Moshe Rabbeinu were to use the tools of expansion after being up on Sinai for those 40 days, and say, you know what, I'd like to expand this more using the tools that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me to expand it, the toolbox of the Yud Gimel Midos, that wouldn't be included, even if it was Moshe Rabbeinu. Not because it's not true, but because that wasn't the precise example of a Torah Shavich, 7 Torah Shavich, which was given on Sinai. It was part of the expanded human, we'll call it, partnership that HaKadosh Baruch Hu welcomed into the expansion of Torah Shavich Peh. That's not included in the 613 mitzvahs, if that's what we're measuring. He says, "V'araya alze." I'm going to give you an example. This is Kula Amram B'Gemara. Tomorrow, the Gemara says, "Elef v'shvami ois kalin v'chamurim v'gezeros shavos v'diktuk yosor from shenishtakhu b'mei evloi shel Moshe." The Gemara says that there were 1,700 halachos. Some of them kulos, some of them chumros, some of them gezeros shavos. All these fascinating things which were lost during the time that Moshe Rabbeinu passed away. Which means that although, as we saw, the Rambam says that, quoting the Midrash Sifrei, that the end of Moshe Rabbeinu's life, he said, Erihu has a question, come and ask me now from the Torah Shebaal Peh of what I received from Hashem. Apparently, there were still things which people lost. They weren't able to amass all of the halacha of Moshe Mishinai, and therefore there were things which were lost. Based on the pasuk in Sefer Shoftim and in Sefer Yeshua, it appears twice. It refers to the conquering of a place called Kiryas Sefer, and the Gemara understands this is not referring to a physical place, but rather it is a metaphoric for the idea that he reconquered and he rederived the halachas that Moshe were lost from Moshe Rabbeinu. So says the Rambam. So he says, look, if there's 630 mitzvahs, Moshe Rabbeinu lost 1,700 of them, does that mean he say he lost the whole Torah? The answer is no. The basic framework of the Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh was never lost. But some of the derivations, the human partnership which Moshe Rabbeinu had using these tools, which is explicit in this Gemara, Gzeira Shava, Kalin, Chamurim, those were lost and re-derived. Which means Osniel ben Knaz, who was one of the Talmidim of Moshe Rabbeinu, was able to derive it in the next generation using his logic to arrive at the same conclusions as Moshe Rabbeinu. So that clearly refers to category 2 of the Torah. They're not lesser, but they're not part of what was Torah Mishinah. That's what the Rambam says over here. Very, very important. And this leads to a fascinating historical and I would call very deeply spiritual idea, which is important to appreciate over here. And that is, you know, the relationship between category 1 and category 2. Category 1 was what was the tradition is handed to Moshe Rabbeinu at Sinai. The Sukkah looks like this, the Esrog looks like this, the Tefillin look like this. And the category 2, which is a derivation. There's a fascinating historical element to this. And it goes back to a very, very famous Gemara in Menachos, Dav Chof, Tesla, Mabez. I'd like to expand it based on the thought process of Rav Tzadok HaKodem of Lublin in a number of places. And we're just going to leave this as a thought to percolate because it is so profound. The Gemara tells the following, that when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Sinai, Omar Rav Yehud, Omar Rav Rav, B'shasha, Ola Moshe Lamoram, Matzah HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shiyoshev HaKosher Kesorim Lo'osios. He arrived at, so to speak, whatever this means, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was tying the crowns to the letters. You know, like when you look at a Torah, certain letters, Shatnez Gates, have crowns upon them. Different traditions have more letters that have them. And he says, Omar Lefon of Moshe, Ribbono Shel Olam. Mima Akav al Yadcha. Moshe Rabbeinu says, Hashem, what's the purpose of this? Who's forcing you to do this? Amaloi Adam Echad. Hashem says, there's going to be a person who's going to be She'asir liyos b'soif kamadoros, who's going to be in many generations' time. Va'akiva ben Yosef Shmoy. His name is Akiva ben Yosef, who we know as Rabbi Akiva. She'asir lidroi shal kol koitz v'koitz tilim v'tilim shal halachos. He's going to look at every crown, every little point, and darshan from it multitudes of halachas. So Moshe Rabbeinu was so astonished by this. He says, Amar lefon of Ribbono shel Olam, Hera'euli, please show him to me. Amar chazula acharecha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, turn around. V'yasha, holach v'yasha b'soif shmone shurois. It says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought Moshe Rabbeinu into the future, and he entered the shir of Rabbi Akiva. Okay, so think about this. And he went to the back of the 8 rows. Now, by the way, just understand how Shirim was structured in those days, when there used to be a hierarchy, not just whoever pushes to get first. The way it would work is that the Talmidim who understood the most sat in the front, the closest Talmidim, and the more junior you were, the more further back recessed you were. He sat in the most recessed row. He was in the 8th row of the Shir, which means Moshe Rabbeinu was, really, so to speak, one of the junior Talmidim of the Shir Rabbi Kiva. V'loya yodea ma'a oimrim. He didn't understand, even as a junior member, wasn't able to understand what is going on in the Shir Rebbe Akiva. Toshash Koicha, he got very concerned. Kevon Shegiel Davar Echad, Amruloi Talmidov, Rebbe, Minayin Lecha. And so at a certain point, one of the Talmidim who was also in the Shir with Moshe Rabbeinu asked Rebbe Akiva, where is it that you got from this? Amar Lohen, Halacha L'Moshe Mishinai. Rebbe Akiva responded, this is a Halacha L'Moshe Mishinai. Nisyash Vadaito, Moshe Rabbeinu was appeased. And then the Gemara goes on to describe the death of Moshe Rabbeinu, who said, how could such a person die? He saw the martyrdom of Rabbi Kiva, and he questioned HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a very fascinating Gemara. Nonetheless, This Gemara is incredibly complex, complex and perplexing, because here you have Moshe Rabbeinu, who we assume learnt all the Torah from no less than HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, is not able to understand what Rabbi Akiva is saying. So what is going on over here? Then he hears that it was halacha l'Moshe v'zina, and he's fine. So what does that mean? Some of Farshim say it means to say that Moshe Rabbeinu had yet to learn from Hashem, meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu has not given him the sum total corpus material of Torah yet. This is about to be learned. But barring that aside, there's another number of explanations as to how this works. Here are a couple examples, and just to understand this, these are the thoughts of Rav Tzadok HaKuran of Lublin, one of the Talmidim of Ishbitz, very 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 fascinating individual, and he explains this in the following way. He says the following. He says Amnam in source 6 in Likutei Ma'amarim. On pay Aleph and Beis, he says the following: "V'omnam adain lo yotzu lapoy al kulam be'es matan Torah. Not all of Torah was moved from potential to actual at the time of matan Torah. U'komosh am Rabbi Yevamos shameshe shehemshech yetzias kulam lapoy al ba'olam hu ad bias ben David. That really the expansion of Torah would be until the time of Mashiach, which means that the Torah was given to us, but it was given in a state of potential." And it's going to take until Mashiach for all of that to be actualized and expanded on properly. What that means is, ki afapi shekvar nitna Torah v'nisgaleis kula ba'olam, even though the Torah was given in the world, mikomakom oisim achachomois gnuzois behelem bedivrei Torah. There are a lot of wisdom which is hidden in the potential of the Torah. Ki haTorah stuma nitna, the Torah was given, so to speak, closed or inaccessible. Rakshi koleles kolam, it includes pregnant with all those explanations. Dugma sa'av shiyesh b'moichoi kol oisam tipim sh'osid lo'etzi ul'hazriya mehem nefashos rabois, aval mikol makom lo'ezriya adayin eloshu kolelom behelem. When he talks about the birthing process, conception process, where he talks about, you talk about it as particular cell, which has the DNA sequence, which when matched with another DNA sequence, the sperm and the egg come together, all of that child's genome is going to be mapped out in that single cell, right? All of that is going to be mapped out in a single cell here. And
have you seen her?
And what is fascinating about that is that what that means to say is that, do you say like this, wait a second, I look at this child, and this child over here is very different to this sperm or egg cell. So I say, well, it can't come from here. The answer is no, of course it does. But the genetic makeup was there and needed expanding upon. But you could really essentially predict the makeup of that child based on seeing these two DNA sequences. Okay? So he says it's so to speak, pregnant in it. V'kach, he says, HaTorah shebichsav, hikoleles behelem kol minei chochma, sheyesh b'chochma shel Hashem yisparach, shirotza shetizkale lebruim. The Torah shebichsav has within it the capacity of expansion of all of the laws which are going to be expanded throughout history. But it's just waiting for that expansion to happen. Anyways, and then he goes on to describe, that's what's called Torah Shebal Peh. He goes through a number of proofs over here. What is interesting now is to appreciate what he's saying. What he's essentially saying is there was the Torah that was given at Sinai, that's the Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebal Peh, but there's a part of it which wasn't given, but it was waiting for us to expand upon. And that's what the Gemara, what Chazal do, is they use the tools to expand it to a further and greater system. Here's the kicker. Here's the fascinating part, is when did this happen? When did this expansion process happen? So you'd think from the moment that Moshe Rabbeinu gave the Torah, and the answer is not precisely. The Rav Tzadok says in Resis Elala, which is one of his explanations on the whole Purim episode, the following very profound point. He says, Ki ascholas hagiloin, this is in source 7, the last source, Ki ascholas giloi Torah Shebal Peh, the real expansion of Torah Shebal Peh, hoy me'ez chasimus hanavua, v'siluk giloi hashchina b'Yisrael, shloi hoya b'veis b'vai sheni. It was really when the Navua started ceasing that the expansion and the derivation of Torah Shebal Peh began. Ki kol divrei nevua shudvar Hashem heim mislabshim gam ken biksav ki heim isgalim kefi levush ha'olam hazeh gam ken v'ruach Hashem dover boi b'chol medaber b'nevua v'ruach HaKodesh mimeila hu mugdar u'mugbal kefi ha'kli ha'levush ha'magbiloi v'en yicholim nahasig marak ma'ashirotza Hashem isbarach l'haro eslohem l'nevua. for the first 1,000 years, essentially from Avram Avinu till the end of time, the 1,000 years of prophecy till the end of the time of Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, which is the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, if you want to know what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you turn to the prophet, and the prophet said, Hashem says A, B, C. And it was very explicit what Hashem wanted in this particular and unique situation. And even though there were sages during those 1,000 years, Gam Kain, Mikol Makom, Mipas Shefa Nevuah V'Gilo Yishchina, Shahaya Oz, because of the explicit interaction with Hashem during that time, Be Yisrael, Loihaya Nechshav Hasaga Derech Chachma Me'atzmoy L'Klum, they wouldn't need to work out what Hashem wanted through a system of halacha, of expanding the Torah to the system of halacha as we have it today, because we didn't need to, because we could ask the Nevi'im what to do in particular circumstances. He calls the Hasaga Mesupekes V'Afela. When you deal with derivations and Chachma, which is category 2 of Torah Shebaal Peh, there's a little bit of darkness. We don't always know if we're arriving at the right conclusion. Mitzad HaOlam Hazeh, because it's part of this world, it's part of the human condition. She'ein Yoidim Imhu Hasaga Amitis, because we don't know if it's really true. Da'alkein Omru B'Sanhedrin B'machashakim Heshivani Al Talmudei Al Talmud Bavli. That in the darkness, Hashem put me, which refers to the Talmud Bavli, because we were deriving through our mind, through our Chochma. Huzeu, kol Chochmas Torah Shebaal Peh la'asig ha'ames mitzad ha'oifel v'ha'elem. What were the Chachamim doing? Answering yes, Zagdola. Chazal, the Chachmei HaMishnah and the Chachmei HaGemara. What they were essentially saying was the following. Is now that Nevuah is dissipated, we have category A of the Torah, of Torah Shebaal Peh, and we have the Torah Shebichzad. That's all we have. We used to have Nevuah, which would tell us to do what to do in any particular circumstance. But now, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? How do we have a system? We went through a Golos, and there was much assimilation and intermarriage in the first Golos of Golos Bavel. It was really bad, as the Rambam describes very clearly about this. So what do? They say, we need to create a system. Anshei Knesset said, we need to create a system. Let's start making siyagim. Let's start making takonos. Let's start deriving the Torah Shebaal Peh into a further and larger, illustrious system of law. And they started expanding based on the human partnership that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave humanity, gave the Chachamim, to partner with him in expanding the Torah. That began at the point that Nevuah dissipated. That's when this all began. Which is fascinating. Now, of course, there were certain derivations we saw Moshe Rabbeinu and Osniel ben Knaz made. But for the most part, we only see the expansion of halacha and the explosion of the system of regulations of halacha appearing at the times of Anshei Knesset Zagdola onward, which is from the cessation of prophecy. So just to clarify misnomers, which sometimes we will hear. Sometimes people will say, you know what, the Torah Shebaal Peh, it was all made up later. The answer is that is incorrect. A large section of the Torah Shebaal Peh accompanied us all the generations. Knowing what the Esrog was, knowing what the Sukkah was, all these things which had no dispute in most parts of the Torah, which there's no dispute upon them, were all given from Moshe Mitzrayim, and they're given from generation to generation to generation, even the times of Nevuah. But the expansion of the legal system that we have today, the expansion of the Gezeros and Takonos, based on either what the Chachamim saw was fit for that generation, or from the expansion using the tools of expansion that were given to them, that really only exploded after Nevuah dissipated, because Nevuah was for particular circumstances rather than for categorical general systems of regulation, which is what the Chachamim derived afterwards. What the Rambam says is category 2, which was only expanded upon generally later. That is not included in the count of 613 mitzvahs, although it is certainly a vital part of Torah Shebaal Peh and the necessity of the survival of the enterprise of Torah for all eternity. So just to put things into perspective, this is what the Rambam says in Shorei Sheni. This is obviously a topic of much, much concern and of much importance in our lives and appreciation of the sophistication of the Torah itself. It's important to understand it. The parameters of it. It's important to understand the history of it. And the next time that we have the opportunity of opening up a Mishnah and Gemara and reading it, to be sensitive to the different sections that are therein. This concludes this shir. I hope this is a very thought-provoking perspective.